We have been looking at the seven seals. Thus far, we have looked at seal number one and seal number two. Tonight, we want to talk about the other two. These are usually called the four horsemen of the apocalypse. A lot of information going forth about these four horses here, and we're going to talk about them again tonight. The next horse is actually the third seal, and the black horse and his rider there in verse 5 and 6 of Revelation chapter 6. Let's look first of all at how that the black horse goes forth in verse 5. And when he had opened the third seal, that is when Christ up in heaven had opened that seal, I heard the third beast say, "Come and see." Now, since we're being told here like third beast, fourth beast, and so on, if you go back over there to the fourth and fifth chapter, you'll find out that the third beast is the one that had the face of a man. So it's a man-like angel that said, "Come and see here." And I beheld, and lo, a black horse. And he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. Now, if you'll note here, the order is really the natural order. We had, first of all, war. Then we had the Antichrist coming, and I mean followed by wars of the early part of the tribulation. Now we've got famine. And this black horse, of course, represents famine. And really that's right in line with what Jesus taught in Matthew chapter 24, because he gave us a bird's eye view of the four horsemen over there in Matthew 24. When he said, first of all, there in verse 5, that the false Christ would arise, that's the white horse. Then he said you'd hear of wars and rumors of wars, that's verse 6. That's the red horse that we studied last Sunday night. And then he said after that, there shall be famines in verse 7. And then he said, and pestilence and earthquakes in divers places. So taking the very order of Christ, it is in line with the order of John. You have Antichrist, you have the wars of the tribulation, then you have famine, and then you'll have pestilence. And these are the natural order of events. Because whenever you have great political power, you're going to end up with some kind of war. And as a result of that war, there's going to be a certain amount of famine. As a result of that famine, there will be a lot of disease go out throughout the land. So it's the natural order that we're looking at here. Have you noticed how that all these horsemen have something in their hand? The white horse had a bow. The rider of the red horse had a sword. And the rider of the black horse has got a pair of scales in his hands. Or balances, as they're called here. And so, why would you suppose that famine would follow after war and all of that? Well, what happens during a time of war? Well, all the men go off to war, and there's nobody left to work the fields. And about the only crops you'll have left will be those that will grow on their own, like fruit trees and grapevines. You know, they'll grow a year or two on their own without much cultivation and all of that. So the crops are probably destroyed by battle. I mean, you can't just go in there and fight a war in a country without tearing up all the agriculture at the same time. I mean, you destroy the town, there's part of the food supply. You destroy the fields, there's no crops left. What do you got? Well, you got famine. That's what you got. You know, many, many times famine is mentioned in the Old Testament. As a matter of fact, it was one of the judgments that God promised to send upon the nation of Israel if they didn't obey Him. This is the time not only of the judgment of the earth dwellers, but also a judgment upon Israel. Back in the book of Leviticus, chapter 26 and verse 26, "And when I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver you your bread again by weight." So in time of famine, they weigh the grains. Look at that. "And ye shall eat and not be satisfied." Let me show you how that famine is connected with the word black. Remember, this horse and his color is black. Go over here to the book of Lamentations. We could read from Jeremiah 14, 1 and 2, but we'll not. Go to Lamentations chapter 4 and look at verse 8 and 9. Their visage is blacker than a coal. They are not known in the streets. Their skin cleaveth to their bones. They're starving to death. It is withered. It is become like a stick. They that are slain with the sword are better than they that be slain with hunger. They're dying two ways there, by the sword and by hunger. For they pine away, stricken through for want of the fruits of the field. And over in chapter 5, the same book of Lamentations. Our skin was black like an oven because of the terrible famine. So in the Bible, black is always associated with famine. And so we would suppose then that the black horse here would represent famine. That's what Jesus said, and that's what the rest of the Scripture says as well. We have some of these fellows, you know, that always want to spiritualize whatever they find. And they say, well, he's talking here about a spiritual famine. Well, like one writer, I'd like to know what scales and wheat and barley has got to do with a spiritual famine. I mean, I understand what it has to do with a physical famine, but I don't know what in the world it has to do with a spiritual famine. So it's not referring here to a spiritual famine. It's referring to a famine that comes about on the earth and where people die from starvation. That's what he's talking about. You know, according to the power that the two witnesses has over there in chapter 11, verse 3 to 6, they may help bring part of this famine on. They can shut up heaven that it rain not. For 3.5 years, that bring famine right there. What part they may play in this, I don't know. I mentioned that just in passing. But I've often wondered if they may have something to do with that. Now what we're seeing here in the time of the tribulation, the time of Jacob's trouble, whenever Christ is reigning on the earth, it's going to be just opposite to what it is here. So you're seeing the two extremes. You're seeing one extreme here, and then you're going to see the other extreme that is good in the millennium. Because over here in Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 29 and 30. And I will save you from all your uncleanness, and will call for the corn, and will increase it, and lay no famine upon you. So what's going to happen during all the thousand-year reign of Christ? There won't be one famine, one place on the earth. Nobody's going to die of starvation. And I will multiply the fruit of the tree and increase of the field, that ye shall receive no more reproach of famine among the heathen. So what we're seeing here is the opposite of the kingdom of Christ when it comes to earth. We're seeing the kingdoms of man at their worst. They produce famine. That's what they do. Now he talks here about the fact that he's got a pair of balances in his hand. We'd call that a set of scales. It's for weighing and selling grain, as we saw back there in Leviticus 26:26. This is always a symbol of scarcity of provision. And it means food rationing. Now, some of us here may not be old enough to remember rationing during the Second World War. I can remember my mother and daddy having little books that had little stamps in them. And you couldn't buy a sack of sugar, and you couldn't buy this, and couldn't buy that unless you had a little stamp. When you used all your stamps up then, you either had to try to trade some with your neighbor, or you had to try to do something to get up those rationing coupons so you could get whatever you wanted. Well, this is going to be the rationing of food, probably on a greater scale than we have ever seen. You have to remember now that the one world government, the Antichrist, is going to have it so that you cannot buy or sell unless you have his name or mark. And that we're going to learn in chapter 13 and verse 17. But that within itself would create famine for those that didn't have the mark of the beast, you see. But this is food rationing. That's what it's talking about there. Now think for a little while. The power of commerce. It can generate prosperity or calamity. It can bring about great inflation our Great Depression. And who manipulates all of this? The politicians, the merchants, and the bankers. We'll talk about them later in chapter 18 of this book. But I just mentioned that in passing. So if there is famine in the land, it's not only caused from war, it's probably also caused from some of the programs of the Antichrist, and could be also caused by some of the plagues of the two witnesses. I don't know, but it's a great famine. It's a great famine in the land. Let's go on down now and look at the sixth verse here that tells about the great scarcity of food and the high prices that we're going to have. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, and see thou hurt not the oil and the wine. Now, who is uttering this voice here? It is certainly not the beast that have been saying to John, come and see. It is certainly not the elders. It is a voice in the midst of the four beasts, and they're round about the throne, so it would be a voice from the midst of the throne. It'd have to be either God or Christ. It's probably the Lord Jesus himself that is speaking here in this verse, I believe. So famine comes upon the earth, certainly because of some secondary causes, but it mostly comes from God. Man rules on this earth, but God overrules. And so no matter what may happen so far as secondary causes are concerned, war and the like, still the famine is coming as a judgment from God. And I said there, a measure of wheat for a penny. Somebody said, well, that sounds like a pretty good deal, you know, a fellow can get a measure of wheat for a penny. Well, we have to bear in mind what this penny is. This is a denarius, which was common currency in that day. And one denarius was all that you got for working all day long in the field. So where do you get that? It's in Matthew chapter 20, verse 2 and verse 9. A penny was a day's wages. So when you think about what's under consideration here, first of all, it talks about a measure. Somebody, well, what is a measure? Well, it's probably, they argue, the scholars do, it's probably more than 2 quarts. Could be almost as small as 1. But we'll just say 2 quarts to be safe, because some would go a little beyond that. We'll just say 2 quarts. In other words, you've got to work all day long to get 1 quart of wheat. So I guess to put it in simple terminology so everybody could understand it, a day's wages for a loaf of bread. Now think about that. That's pretty runaway inflation. That's great scarcity of food there. And so here is a very small amount of stuff. And really, that measure of wheat was all they gave a slave to eat on all day long. That's all he got. It was like a quart of wheat or something like that to eat, maybe a loaf of bread. Then he said 3 measures of barley. Well, ordinarily barley was something that they fed to the animals rather than humans back in the time of the Old Testament there. And so it was a cheaper grain, generally fed to animals. But if a man wanted to buy that, he could get enough for 3 good meals for 1 day's wages. But now let's suppose that he did get 3 good meals out of a day's wages. What would his family eat? What would the old people in the household eat with him? What would the young babies eat at home? You see what a problem there? In the time of the Bible, the denarius would have bought about 16 measures of wheat in the time of Cicero and 20 in the time of Trajan. In John's day, it would have bought about 8 times what is mentioned here. So this is runaway inflation. Things will be 8 times higher than they ordinarily ought to be. So you just up it 8 times. In other words, if it's a dollar now, then it'll be $8 then, or 10 or 12, something like that. That'll give you some ideas. Imagine now if you go down to the grocery store and instead of paying like a dollar for a loaf of bread or something like that, you got to pay 12, maybe $15 for a loaf of bread. That's quite a bit of money by anybody's standards, even at today's prices and all of that. So here is food rationing. Food is very scarce. And then we have an expression here that had really puzzled scholars and puzzled me some too as well. See that thou hurt not the oil and the wine. It seems like there's at least one meaning here for certain and probably another if you want to look at it. if you stop and think about it, if you have wars, ordinarily the olive groves and the vineyards and all would probably grow 1 year on their own. They wouldn't grow as well, but they'd probably grow 1 year on their own, and they probably would not get injured in battle as much as some of the other things. So not all necessities of life are being destroyed here, but a great many of them are. What we're seeing in all of this is Christ laying siege to this earth. He is laying siege to this earth. You know, whenever an army would surround a town, they would lay it to siege. They'd cut off the food provision. They'd cut off the water supply. Well, you just watch in the book of Revelation, the Lord is laying siege to this earth where His kingdom's going to be. And He's going to conquer, too. He's now depriving His enemies of their food. He reduced them to starvation. There are many scholars that believe what it means is that wheat and barley will be very high, but luxuries like wine and oil, there'll be plenty of those. But I doubt that's probably the meaning of it, but that's what some understand it to mean. Now let's think about something else. If the water got polluted in that day and time, they had to drink wine so as not to have trouble with their stomach. That's why Paul probably told Timothy to take a little wine for his stomach's sake over there. Probably had a problem with his stomach, and the wine would keep having to drink that polluted water and all of that. But anyway, there was other reasons why that they had the wine and they had the oil. Wine was used for medicine, according to Luke 10:34. Remember the Good Samaritan? When he found a man down on the road that had been wounded, he poured in oil and wine. So the oil and the wine was sometimes used for medicinal purposes. And so if you got a lot of people that were hurt in the war, if you got a lot of people that are sick and dying, then you would need all the medical supplies you could get. And maybe that's why I said, see that you hurt not the oil and the wine. In other words, we need that for sure. We need medicine and all of that. Also, oil was a source of energy, according to Matthew 25:1-13. They had oil in their lamps when they went out to meet the bridegroom. They also cooked with some of that olive oil, as we do sometime today. But now, is there maybe something even more so in this than what I have seen? Is this a reference to Babylon getting full control of all the oil reserves in the world? I grant the black gold was unknown in the time probably of the Old and New Testament, but it's certainly known today. It is oil, I mean. You can call it whatever you want to. Are we really seeing here how that the Antichrist will control all the oil reserve and he'll also control all the food supply? You can't buy or sell unless you have the mark, the number, or the name of the beast. Well, that's something. According to the latest statistics that I've seen, there's about 400 million people in danger of starvation throughout the world right now tonight. That's a lot of people right there to think about. Can you imagine what it'll be like when all of these events take place? Well, it'll be something to think about. Somebody said, well, now, when you're talking about famine there, you're talking about third world countries. No, this is the whole earth. This is England, United States, Europe, Mexico, South America. This is not just third world countries. This is the whole habitable earth that's undergoing famine. Christ said it's going to come. You may not know it. A lot of people have the idea that we have a terrible amount of food supply in this country. It's not nearly so great as you think. You would be surprised how quickly that the shelves of the grocery stores could go empty if people started buying and hoarding up food. I recall a time when they gave out a very severe weather forecast up in Kentucky when I lived up there. And we went chasing down to the store just as fast as we could go. We thought we'd better store up because where we live, it's pretty hard to get out to the highway sometime. Guess what? We got down and over half of the shelves were already empty. I'm talking about a big grocery store there where I live. And there's almost fighting over the meat department back there. You better get out of the way or you get hurt. Now, if that could happen just on a very small scale, imagine going months without anything to eat. Well, the food supply is not as great in our storehouses as everybody supposed. It would last a very short period of time. Scholars men of business and all have got it all figured out, and it's not as long as you think. It's a very short space of time. You take a month, and we'd just about be in bad shape. Matter of fact, some of us would be in bad shape probably in a week's time if the truth was known. Now let's go on and look at the pale horse and his rider that is down there in verse 7 and 8. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast, that'd be the one that looks like the eagle, say, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beast of the earth. Let's go back and look at those verses a little while there. First of all, let's go back and talk about that pale horse. That is really a sickly, pale green, like young vegetation. And to really convey the idea of the color that is under consideration here, have you ever seen a dead body? I'm talking about a decayed animal that has just about completely gone beyond the point that you want to hold your nose when you come up to it. Have you ever seen that skin? It turns sort of a greenish color, sort of slick and oily-like, looks rather nauseating to look upon. Well, that really is the color of this horse here. That's the color of this horse. Now, you note that this horse has a rider, and he's got a name. He's called Death. And it's said that hell followed with him. Now, what we have here is confirmation that these horsemen are not real persons, but symbolic. Like the white horse, symbolic of the Antichrist. The red horse, symbolic of war. Then the black horse, symbolic of famine. They are all symbolic, every one of them. Let me say, when they ride forth during the tribulation period, it never speaks about them coming back to the stall. They continue riding throughout that whole time of it. They're still here. So this rider, unlike the others that we have seen before, has got another rider coming right after him, and he's called Hell. So then, in fact, you would have like two riding here. You'd have, first of all, Death, and then he'd be followed by Hell. Either got two men on one horse, or you got another rider coming, any way you want to look at it. But there, it speaks of them as them in the plural after this, as you can see there. So this deadly plague follows here. It's pestilence. That's disease that's caused from all the wars and bloodshed that comes. And in time you have a lot of people killed, you have a lot of dead bodies lying around, you're going to have pestilence. You're going to have disease. So this deadly plague that follows as the reapers are gathering the awful harvest there is pestilence. It's pestilence. Now you say, well, why does he call them Death and Hell? Well, Death claims the body and Hell claims the soul. And you note there that Death is first and then Hell is next. Some people have the idea, you know, that death ends all. Death does not end all. If a man dies unsaved, he goes to hell. Because death and hell are put together here in this same verse. So the soul of wicked people, they go to hell after death. And here's proof of it. You know, the people that are dying here, they're all unsaved people. Because they all go to hell when they die. This is not any of the saints that's seen dying here, because there is no paradise section of hell at the time John wrote this. So here, really, beast worshipers, unsaved people that are dying here. It's not the righteous that's under consideration. Death and hell are mentioned back in chapter 1, verse 18 of this book. Christ has the keys of death and hell. Then over in chapter 20, and verse 13, death and hell will be cast in to the lake of fire. So they're mentioned three times together here in the book of Revelation. Now let's note the statement there, and power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth. That power, no doubt, comes from the devil by God's permission, as always we'd have to understand. It says, power was given unto them. Now the question is, who is the them? And again, the scholars debate. Ordinarily, I would say that it would be death and hell, just looking at the verse before. That would make up them. That's two. But most people believe that it includes all the four horsemen. That's probably correct, too. Because like I said, when they ride forth, they never come riding back. They just keep on riding forth, what I want you to understand. Now, they have power given them over the fourth part of the earth. And I would not dare, as some do, restrict this to the land of Israel or the boundary lines of the Roman Empire. I knew some preacher friends of mine did that one time. To me, the earth means the earth. I'm talking about the whole world. So the sphere of action here involves a fourth part of this earth on which we live, on this planet. Now, since it says that only a fourth part will be affected, while we see here judgment, it is judgment that is mingled with mercy because two-thirds, or rather three-fourths, will be excluded, whereas only one-fourth will suffer there. So then fourth part implies there's limitation in what these horsemen can do. They can do so much, no more, and then no less. Then he said, and to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beast of the earth. Now think about that. I told you this morning I would preach tonight about when 1 billion people or more would die. Well, here it is. The present population of the world, 1996, the last figures I saw, was 5 billion. All right, if you've got 5 billion people living here on this earth, and you're going to have a fourth of them to die, you've got over 1 billion people dead there. So, well, that sounds like a great tragedy. I can't even really imagine that many people all dead at one time. I mean, I can't imagine like 200 or 300 would look like a big figure to me. You're talking about one-fourth of the population of the world going to die. Well, is that not maybe why the tribulation is called a time of unparalleled suffering? Why? Because more people are going to die during that time than ever did die during any dispensation in all the history of man. All of it is going to happen in 7 years. This is only the first 3.5 we're looking at now. In the first 3.5 years of the tribulation, better than, 1 billion people will die by war or by famine or by pestilence. You know, when Daniel wrote of this time, he said, at that time shall Michael stand up, chapter 12, verse 1, the great prince that standeth for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even unto that same time. Well, if you've got 1 billion people going to die in 3.5 years, that's the worst time the world's ever known. There's never been that many people die at one time. Talk about a record, that's it. That is a record. Something like 50 million people died in the Second World War. I'm not talking about 50 million. I'm talking about better than 1 billion. That's scary to think about. And what did Jesus say about this same period of time there in Matthew 24 we've been looking at? He made a very strong statement there in verse 22. He said, except those days be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. In other words, if the affairs of the tribulation went on more than 7 years, it would annihilate life on this earth. There wouldn't be any man or beast left. All flesh would be consumed. And so indeed, it is a time of unparalleled suffering. And then we want to raise a question here. What about being slain with the beast of the earth? I don't know whether you've ever thought about it or not, but just think about the number of times in the Bible that God did send beasts to accomplish His purpose of judgment. I can't read all the verses that I have here, but I want to read you just a few to show you what I'm talking about. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 32 and look at verse 24. They shall be burnt with hunger and devoured with burning heat and with bitter destruction. I will also send the teeth of beasts upon them. with the poison of serpents of the dust. You note how that beast and serpents are all put together in that verse. And so over there in Revelation, that might include some fiery serpents among the people too. And then another time that you can see, well, like there in 2 Kings 17:25, the Lord sent lions among the Israelites and killed a lot of them. And let's note another passage over here in Jeremiah chapter 5 and verse 6. Wherefore a lion out of the forest shall slay them. God using the beast. And a wolf the evening, and a wolf of the evening shall spoil them. A leopard shall watch over their cities. Every one that goeth out thence shall be torn in pieces, because their transgressions are many and their backslidings are increased. Now remember when we read here from Ezekiel 14 and 21 about the four sword judgments of God? What was those four sword judgments? Let's go back and look at that verse again. Chapter 14, verse 21. For thus saith the Lord God, how much when I send my four sword judgments upon Jerusalem, the sword and famine, there's two of our horses, the noisome beast and the pestilence, there we have it, to cut off it from man and beast. Now what we're seeing here again is the very opposite of what you're going to have in the millennium. Here you have the beast going around eating the people up. But in fact, in the millennium, they're not going to hurt anybody, anywhere, anytime, any place. Now listen to the description of the kingdom of Christ in the 11th chapter of the book of Isaiah and verse 7. It reads like this. Isaiah 11 and verse 7. The cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, the lion shall eat straw like the ox. Their nature's been changed. They don't even eat flesh anymore. It says in verse 9, they shall not hurt nor destroy in all of my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as waters cover the sea. And then over here in the book of Ezekiel, when he talks about the kingdom age, in chapter 34 and verse 25, and I will make with them a covenant of peace and will cause the evil beast to cease out of the land. And they shall dwell safely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods. So what we're seeing here is the very opposite of the kingdom of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now for a few moments, just think about how God has used inferior creatures in judgment, like the hornets in Exodus chapter 23, the fiery serpents in Numbers 21, the lions in 2 Kings 17:25. And the she-bears in 2 Kings chapter 2 and verse 24. All the creatures on this earth are God's servants. And He can use them any way that He wants to. So I can imagine that He's going to turn loose all these creatures upon man, including the fiery serpents, probably like the Israelites had. Now the only thing that might be a little bit against that, and I'm inclined to take it in the literal sense there, because when he talks about the sword, that's a literal sword. That's really war. I mean, that's not spiritual warfare. When he talks about pestilence and famine, that's real famine, real pestilence. So I think the beast here probably real. But the only problem with that is that this term, beast, is a word for wild beast. It's not the word translated like the four beasts. That's a different word entirely. This is a word for wild beast. It's a word used actually 28 times in the book of Revelation. And in every other occurrence in the book except the one here, it means wicked political figures. You'll see that especially in chapter 13, verse 1, verse 11, and all of that. And they're called over there, the beast comes up out of the sea, the beast that comes up out of the earth. Two beasts of the earth over there. Now what are we seeing here in all of these four horsemen that we've studied? We're seeing the results of man's effort to direct the affairs of his life on this earth apart from God. It results in a one-world government, food rationing and war, and almost annihilation of man from off the earth. So man at his best apart from God is not very good. He is a failure. You know, we have people today that say, well, we're going to have peace. I disagree. I believe we're going to have war. They cry, we're going to have prosperity and plenty. I believe that famine's coming. People say, well, medical science has conquered all disease. I believe pestilence is coming. The greatest outbreak of disease the world has ever known. AIDS won't be a drop in the bucket. I hear hunters right here where I live complaining about how that all the game in the forest has disappeared. There's not much left to hunt. I got news for them. They're going to be multiplied and they're going to slay thousands of people. That's what the Bible says is going to take place on this earth. Let us stand and we'll sing.